The Federal Communications Commission, FCC, just extended the public comment period on their net neutrality proposal because their site received so much traffic it apparently crashed. They've received almost 800,000 public comments on these proposed regulations, still collecting comments until Friday at midnight.
Barry Orton is with us to discuss what consumers are saying about net neutrality and to explain the current plan in place. He's a professor of telecommunications at UW-Madison. Professor Orton, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just start out with a general reminder. I think it's been a little while at least since we've covered this on Central Time. What's the latest on the net neutrality case?
The latest is the Federal Communications Commission has proposed rules, and it is opened for comments on those new rules. And those comments, because they did crash the server and have come in such great numbers, have now been extended until Friday at midnight. So it's still not too late to comment on the net neutrality rules, which I'll explain in a second. The way you comment is you go to www.fcc.gov/comments. And the very first one you see would be number 14-28, and that would be, you click on that and you get a place to put in your name and so on, and a big blank space to write your comments. So, what is net neutrality? It's the idea that the owners of pieces of the internet service providers, in which for most people are either a phone company, a cable company, a satellite provider, in some cases a separate local internet service provider, those providers cannot discriminate between signals, between different kinds of sources of information on the internet, but have to treat each the same depending on what kind of service they are. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has tried now in the last 10 years three different times to classify the internet in such a way that it could set it up to be essentially fair, that each individual cable subscriber or internet subscriber would essentially have access to all the things available on the internet on an equal basis. Three times the courts have turned them down and said the way they have done it is not legal and not statutorily supported. So we're now on trial number four. The commissioner or the chairman of the commission, Thomas Wheeler, has proposed a system whereby there will be a certain number of carriers that will be in what's called a fast lane, which can be essentially a method by which they provide signals that are essentially privileged and will go get to your home faster at a more quick and efficient route, essentially. And this would be for services like Netflix, which is already paying for Comcast to carry it on a similar kind of basis so that its subscribers have their signals coming in at a fast enough rate that the signal doesn't stop or break down or lose its definition. Other providers, such as YouTube, which didn't pay for that privileged position, would go on at the regular speed, and theoretically, anyway, their signal could have less of quality than those that are paying for the more privileged bandwidth. Now, there's been an enormous pushback on that, as you can imagine. And because the internet had been previously set up on a common carrier basis, which is the way telephone lines work, and that's essentially a first-come, first-served, treat everybody equally and reasonably basis, and that's essentially the free and open internet that we had kind of learned to depend on over the years. And so that would essentially change. And the pushback, particularly from consumers and from individuals and companies that wouldn't be in this kind of privileged position, has been enormous. And so the FCC has extended the comment period. And at this point, there is no single thing that they have gotten more comments on.
I was reading about that. And okay, so Forbes had reported as well that 36 internet companies, including Google, Netflix, and Amazon, had urged the FCC in a memo to to not, it seems as though they're saying, do not go in this way. The internet is threatened by broadband internet access providers who would turn the open best efforts internet into a pay-for-priority platform more closely resembling cable television than today's internet.
Correct.
My question about that, though, is that these big mega companies that exist on the internet, Amazon, Netflix, Google, they seem to be the types of companies that would benefit from this type of thing. So what's the grounds for their concern?
They would benefit in the fact that they have enough money to pay for the prioritization. But they would prefer not to have any prioritization, or at least not on this basis. Most of the people who are arguing against this proposal, and that's all it is at this point, is a proposal, are saying that the FCC should do something far more robust, and that they should put the internet under what's called Title II, Roman numer II, which is common carrier status, which is the status that telephone systems have now. And that would essentially make the internet not quite a free-for-all, but at least a everybody is equal kind of situation, and then the FCC would have at least the legal authority to make those kinds of rules stick. At this point, every other way it's tried, the courts have said, no, you don't have the legal authority, and no matter what they do, the very large carriers like Verizon, AT&T, and the large cable companies are likely to sue if there isn't a robust legal platform under the whatever rules the FCC ultimately passes. This is a political issue. Make no mistake about it. The big companies that would benefit from this are trying to argue that their First Amendment rights would be trampled upon if the FCC went to this more robust Title II common carriage kind of platform.
And we'll certainly talk more about this after the news. But real quickly, I'm wondering if the public awareness of the not just what this issue is, but the implications of it had been as great as it seemed to be after John Oliver on his HBO show kind of did a bit on it that went viral. And he gave very specific instructions on how to engage the FCC and submit comments. And that's right. That's when we saw the first crash of the website. What's your response to that?
Well, this is an issue that is very technically detailed and legally detailed, and the average consumer gets lost in it very, very quickly. Oliver did a very good job of making it extremely simple and putting on a very amusing rant, and people watched it and said, yes, he's right. I don't want these big companies to control the internet. And so they clicked on fcc.gov/comments, and at least once they seem to have crashed the server. Mm-hmm. But at this point, the server is up and running and taking comments. And the more comments on this, the better. The more public interest, the better. This is big corporations cutting up the cake. And the cake being the...
Professor Orton, we'll pick that up after the news. We're talking with Barry Orton about the FCC's extension of public comment period on net neutrality.
You can join the conversation. Are you one of the 800,000 people who commented on this? Call in and tell us why and what you said. Share your thoughts and your questions on internet regulation, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We're continuing our conversation with Barry Orton about the influx of public comments to the FCC on net neutrality.
And we're taking your calls now at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the 800,000 people who briefly helped crash the FCC website with your comments on this issue? What do you want the FCC to know? What you think about the way the internet should be regulated? Do you think, as they propose, the people who own the wires, the tubes, as they've been called, should be able to charge higher rates for faster access to some, slower access for others, or should it be first come, first serve, equal for everyone? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org.
Professor Orton, before the news, you were saying that the more comments, the better in this process. And as we mentioned, nearly 800,000 comments have been submitted, I guess, by our last estimation. I'm wondering the process, though, for reviewing these comments and how it will lead to an eventual decision.
Well, there's a bunch of staffers who are going through these and probably categorizing them as pro, con, from and who they're from in terms of socioeconomic background and so on, as best they can. These get summarized and go to the commissioners who get to vote on this. This is by no means the end if you don't do it by Friday, because then there's another comment period that lets people comment on the comments, so that if you take umbrage at something that AT&T said, or you look at the comments, and of course they're all public, that you don't like what Comcast said, you have a chance to refute it, and that's going to go on through the summer. So this is a very long, convoluted legal process that culminates in a vote on the actual proposed rule by the five commissioners, three of which are Democrats, two of which are Republicans. There probably will be a 3-2 vote, but the commissioner, the chairman, has to get both Democrats to agree with him, and one or more of them might want him to go further. And depending on how many comments and how much pressure they get, they're getting these comments, they're getting lobbied by lots of individuals and lots of companies, and where the dust settles at this point, nobody really has a good sense of yet. But the sense is there's lots of money at play, and the bigger corporations that are involved in this are really lobbying it very heavily. And the next step is, if they don't like what happens at the FCC, they can go to court on it, or they could try to get Congress to pass a more specific rule and force the FCC to do something. And that right now is what's going on in the House. There's a House bill today that would defund the FCC from doing specific things on net neutrality. It's not going to pass, or if it passes, it certainly won't pass the Senate. But there's political pressure going on, as well as enormous money pressure from every side in this.
And FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler was formerly a lobbyist for the industry and industry head for the cable industry and later for the cellular industry, as I understand it. So how does that play into the conversation? A lot of people are concerned about that.
Well, a lot of people say that even though he's the chair and he's a Democrat and he's been appointed by the president and he's pushing a more pro-net neutrality stance than others might have, he's an industry captive. And he made his fortune in both of those industries, primarily lobbying that the very same agency he is now running. But this is nothing new. The past half dozen FCC chairs all came from industry, more or less, and many of them went back to industry. The current chair of the National Cable Association used to be the FCC chair in the Bush administration, Michael Powell, the son of General Colin Powell. Now he's arguing for the industry, and he was the one who set up the original net neutrality rules under the scheme that turned out to be illegal in the first place because it wasn't robust enough. The arm's length between the industries that the FCC regulates and the industry and the FCC commissioners is a very short arm.
Let's talk to Doug in Lancaster. Hi, Doug.
Hi there. You touched on just exactly what I was thinking with regards to not only the current FCC chairman, but the previous FCC chairman, who is now in league with the lobby groups that are lobbying for net neutrality. This is all about money, and our government is truly an oligarchy. Take a look at our past Secretary of the Treasury, who are now working at Goldman Sachs and the big Wall Street firms. This is no different. The people will speak. They'll crash the website again probably this week, but nobody will listen. It will go to Congress, as you guys are alluding to, and we won't be listened to yet again. I did make my voice heard. I'm proud to have said I did. I hope it amounts to something, but sadly, I'm not optimistic. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. What's your response to that, Professor Orton? Is there a reason to be optimistic at all?
I'm somewhat optimistic in that this is now on the public agenda as a real item. And so there is debate and there is discussion, which is far more than it had been before. And I think that's a good thing. But whether there's equality of decision making in terms of my voice versus Comcast voice, I don't have anywhere near that their kind of clout, and I think this goes in a lot of areas. This is nothing new in our system. What individuals have to do is band together in any way they can. There are a lot of large organizations getting involved in this on all sides, and to make your voices heard. But in the lobbying business of Washington, money talks.
Thanks again for that call, Doug. Jen in Cedarburg is next. Hi, Jen.
Hi. As far as I'm concerned, corporations can pay for having faster speeds if they want, as long as the base speed that everybody else gets is 10 megabits per second or greater. Today, everybody in America is suffering with an archaic technology. We're about the slowest speeds in the entire world for our internet transmissions, and if they were significantly higher to what the rest of the world is capable of, we would probably not complain about this. It's all about speed is really what it comes down to. Nobody wants to get stuck at the horrible speed ratings of DSL today or even cable of today. There are countries around the world that have speeds 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 times faster than what we have in America here, and they don't pay half of what we pay. Americans are getting screwed badly by the corporations on this topic, and it really comes down to the speed that we get, not who controls the speed or what speed companies that pay lots of money get.
Okay. Well, thanks for that comment. Professor Orton, what's your response?
My response is, yes, that's true, but, and of course, his big if is, if we all had high speed, it wouldn't matter, but we don't, and it doesn't look like we're going to in the near future. And so bandwidth is somewhat limited in most cases today. And so it does make a big difference if you're going to be downloading a Netflix movie and Netflix or versus a Hulu, and Hulu doesn't pay for preferred access and Netflix does, your Netflix is going to look a lot better. So it's still a matter of getting what you're paying for, and those who pay more get better. That doesn't change very much. But at this point, the controlling element of that is at the FCC, and the FCC does have the legal power to assert its authority and say these inequitable situations can only be done if they're done reasonably and done under controlled circumstances. The companies involved really want very little or no control. That gives them total control.
You had talked about how this is an issue that's cropped up a couple of times, and this time is obviously it's getting a lot more of a public interest than previously. How do you think this will unfold ultimately?
Well, I think many telecommunications lawyers will be able to put their children through expensive private colleges as a result of the work they'll get of litigating this.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Professor Barry Orton, Professor of Telecommunications at UW-Madison.